Hey, Mitch.
Hi, Kelly.
Hey, we still stuck in Texas?
Ugh, God, yes, we are absolutely stuck in Texas.
Oh, yeah, tell Wang. All right, so you gave me an assignment outside of the podcast.
That's right. I wanted to kind of set my portion up of helping you in the way of a curriculum. Is that the right word? Curriculum?
Sounds like a real word to me.
All right. So, a little bit of a backstory to this.
Oh, I love a backstory.
So, in around 2012, it's like we're there. around 2012, I believe, maybe a little bit before that, there was a comedian going around selling a comedy boot camp where he would charge open micers anywhere from $500 to $1,500.
Ooh, open micers don't have that money.
Well, you know, but their parents do sometimes. And, you know, a lot of comedians come from money, and that's how they're able to make it, because their parents fund their lives until they get to a point where they become successful.
So they're the ones putting gas in the tank.
Oh, yeah, and paying for apartments in Hollywood and things like that.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's quite...
Is there a waiting list for those parents?
Yeah, we missed out on that boat.
Oh.
So anyway, this guy was really, you know, taking advantage of people who had this idea of what it would take to make it. And, you know, the truth is, to really get good at stand-up comedy, I don't think there's a class that you can take. But a comedian named John Roy came out. He came on Twitter and he said, "Hey, don't pay for a comedy class. Here is a curriculum that I'm going to give you. It's 5 weeks long, and I'll give you a couple assignments each week to do, and this will help you become a better comedian."
And he just put this out there into the world for free.
Completely free. And basically, he said the same thing. Like, a class isn't going to make you a better comedian, but I will give you some tools to work with while you're getting up on stage, which really is the thing that's going to make you a better comedian, to hone your craft. And so I stole it.
So that guy kind of stole the other guy's, and now you're kind of stealing his.
No, what that guy did was say, "Hey, what the other guy's doing is a sham.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to help you for free."
Okay, so we outed a fraudster and helped legions.
Right.
Of stand-up wannabes.
And so I said, "Hey, you know, he was putting it out there for free. Obviously, he wants young up-and-coming comedians to have access to this." And so I got it. I brought it to you. And basically, I think it's like 5 weeks long, and we have some assignments that we do. And so the first assignment was to find the open mics in your area. And you've done that.
Check.
And then the second assignment was to write 5 minutes of material.
Oh, I'm a gold star pupil.
And what we did for that one was I came up with a topic that I wanted you to write about, and it was the holidays.
Oh, I was supposed to write a full 5 minutes on that?
No, it didn't have to be five minutes. But you did the assignment. You wrote material about the holidays, and then afterwards you had to go perform it. And then the third assignment was to memorize it, which you actually went up with some notes, but I think that's okay.
Can I, in my defense, which is just lame, I wrote it in the bathtub at 3 p.m. and then did the open mic that night. So I definitely needed the notes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it was a last-minute thing. Normally, you would have a couple days to work on your set, but, you know, and I thought you did. So then the final assignment is some questions about it, and I wanted to go over those questions with you.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about it. Number one, and our open mic isn't great, but which of your jokes do you think landed and got laughs?
I would say, out of everything that I did, when I ripped on the other comedians at the end, that was not planned.
Let's focus on the
written
on
stuff.
On the holiday stuff, yeah.
Okay.
And we'll come back to the ripping on the comedians later, some of the more off-the-cuff items. So let's just read off what the topics of each joke.
Okay, the first one was about Thanksgiving. I figured start it with the start of the holiday season.
And I liked that one a lot. I gave you a little punch up for it.
Yep.
But the basic premise of that was...
Here it is. I did something different for Thanksgiving this year. I ate at the grown-ups table. After your first kid goes to college, they start easing up on the height restrictions.
Great. I think it was a funny thing that you're like in your 40s, and this is the first time that you've ever sat at the grown-ups table. I mean, that's funny in itself. But then why would that be the case? And it's because you're tiny, you're a tiny person, but you have a child in college, so they're like, look, we gotta move her over here. So that was a good one. I laughed at that one. I thought it was funny.
Honestly, the grown-up table is not all it's cracked up to be.
That's right. It's not nearly as fun. Less food fights. And
less people can hear what you say.
You always feel like you're yelling. So I think there's more things there, for sure.
You think I could stretch that out?
For sure, yeah. I think that's the fun part about working on the same jokes week after week is like coming up with different tags for those jokes.
Okay.
So what was the second premise?
What's a tag?
A tag is just that, like a second punchline.
Okay.
A third punchline. It's like what we're doing right now where we go, they ease up on the height restrictions. But it's not all it's cracked up to be. You got to yell, things like that. So each one of those is a tag to a joke.
So the second joke that I wrote was that I'm from a mixed couple, that I'm from America and my husband's from Texas.
You said you're a Yankee.
I did, but I really think that...
You want to separate... I think that might be funnier.
That I'm an American.
But say it the other way around.
My husband is Texan.
And my husband is from Texas, and I'm from America.
Right.
I think that's a better way to say that. Because if you say I'm from America and my husband's from Texas, I don't know, I feel like it's almost giving away the joke.
Right, okay. Yeah, I am a Yankee. It took about a decade, but his family is starting to accept me and our mixed children.
Yes, that was a good one. And then you talked about mayonnaise.
I did. I talked a lot about mayonnaise, mostly because I just wanted to out my husband for having to take a shit under a bridge on the way home from Thanksgiving dinner last year.
I will say that you make a potato salad that I've had.
Right.
That doesn't have mayonnaise. It's a mustard-based potato salad.
Yeah, it's vinegar.
It's vinegar? Mm-hmm. Is there no mustard in
there's
it?
There's a tad of mustard, but I'm German, so I make German potato salad.
Yeah, now just so you know, I personally feel like the mayonnaise is normal.
Right.
And you're weird.
I am weird. Okay. I am not going to debate that. So, and I think, honestly, bringing up how weird I am in front of a bunch of Texans gives them permission to laugh, which is what they're doing behind my backs anyway for me being such a weird alien type person.
All right, what was the next one?
Let's see. I was talking about how Texas thinks that they're the best.
Oh, I like that because you go, Texas is the best, although they did rank the 31st worst state or best or whatever. They were number 31 on states to live in, which I don't know how that's possible if they're the best.
Well, I thought about rewording that to everyone raised here is sure Texas is the best state, even if they've never traveled farther than Amarillo. And it may be number 31 best states to live in, according to Google. Somehow take that one and play with it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to listen to the way you did it again. But the fact that everyone here thinks it's number one, but it's number 31.
There's only 50 states, too.
I know.
That's not...
So it's in the lower half.
Yeah, it's in the failing half of the class.
I think the funniest part about that is that they haven't traveled past Amarillo, because Amarillo isn't even the last town in Texas. You still got another 100 miles to go. Before you leave Texas.
Texas is so big.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And then I said, although I do think Texas has some of their priorities right, like in 2014, Decatur rescheduled Halloween because it was in conflict with a high school football game.
That's the most Texas thing that there is. And what I think is interesting about that is they wouldn't cancel it for an NFL game or for a college game, but it's all about the high school football game. And maybe the funny thing about that is it's not why you think, it's just all the high schoolers wanted a chance to go trick-or-treating. You know, maybe that would be the joke. Or all the high schoolers needed to use their football uniforms as their costume or something like that. Like, what would be the reason why? I think that's the direction. You could get another tag or two out of that.
That's great.
Think of ways to compare Halloween to the football game, you know, but it was still fun to go and see a bunch of kids in costume.
I like that.
All right, what was the next one?
Groceries. That's when I started talking about mayonnaise and how our grocery stores look like they have the same stuff in them, but what Texans do with the stuff is honestly a crime against food.
Well, okay, so what were some of the things you said?
Mayonnaise up north, we may put it on a sandwich. And in Texas, like, you're making something, it's like, oh, throw in a plop of mayonnaise, no matter what it is.
You know, I got to be honest with you, you're just losing me by talking so disparagingly against mayonnaise. It's hard for me to really focus on how to help you with this joke because I'm just like...
You're in shock.
You're the one that needs to...
I need counseling?
Yes. Yeah. You need more mayonnaise in your life.
Whew! I don't know if we have enough toilet paper for that. Oh my gosh.
Does mayonnaise make people poop?
Well, if last year's Thanksgiving dinner is any indication, yes. My aunt made every dish except the sweet potato casserole with mayonnaise. She made broccoli salad, which, where I come from, salads are the healthy part of the meal. Everything in it was coated in mayonnaise.
You know, it's interesting. So growing up, fruit salad. What would you consider a fruit salad to be?
Like chopped up apples, bananas, oranges.
Yeah, you know what a fruit salad was in my house?
No.
It was chopped up apples, chopped up banana, and raisins mixed together with mayonnaise.
No.
Yes.
No.
It is delicious.
That's so gross.
I love that. That is a good fruit salad.
My mouth just got all phlegmy. Oh. And then I talked about how my husband always gives me grief for saving every fast food napkin when I take his car.
Yeah, and your punchline to that was you find value in things.
Worthless things, yeah.
Worthless things, which led to a callback later.
Right. It's kind of there, but it's really more for the callback at the end, I think.
Yes.
And then I went into decorating for Christmas.
Wait, hold on. I got it. You could say, I find value in worthless things, like our children. You know, or something like that. I think it's funny to say it. You find value in worthless things, but you have to take a thing that isn't worthless
and make it worthless,
and say that that's what you find value in. And you can't say your husband, that's mean. But you can say your children. In fact, because I wouldn't even say they're worthless. They're of negative value because of all the debt we've incurred sending them to school or to the scouts or whatever. You know, like
they are the most expensive pets I've ever had.
My mom, my two brothers have probably cost $100,000 in hockey.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and I...
Wait, you're from Georgia?
But my mom raised my brothers in Virginia.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Because of the Navy.
Okay.
And so they got to grow up playing hockey, and they were on travel teams, and that's a very expensive thing. So I think that's actually a funny way to put it, because initially it sounds like you don't like your kids. But if you go, in fact, they're not worthless, they're actually negative value because of all the money we've invested into their joy.
Right.
You know, because you're still a good parent for spending money on them.
Mm-hmm.
You just acknowledge how expensive it is to have a child.
God, they are a money pit.
And then what was the next thing?
I talked about how we usually put up the tree on Black Friday.
I liked this one. There was a way that you said it initially where you were like, you basically still haven't done it.
I've only gotten the tree up. It was difficult this year because our Halloween decorations were still up.
Are still up.
And then I said, are still
up. Yes, I thought that was very fun. That's what was sticking with me, was the fact that your Halloween decorations were still up past Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like you haven't had a month to get rid of it.
I feel very judged in this moment.
And then what was after that?
How decorating a Christmas tree is an undertaking. Like, we literally rearranged the furniture in our living room to put the tree up.
Oh, that was the joke that I thought was the best one, where you said you rearranged the furniture, which coincidentally, you vacuum under your couch once a year.
Only once. And it's generally just dust bunnies and dog toys. This year, there was also a dead, dried gecko. And he kind of looked like a sleeping cocapelli.
Uh-huh.
He was pretty sweet. I did get the tree up. I got that thing on clearance 20 years ago. The lights don't work. It clogs my vacuum with all its needles it drops. But I can't replace it. Because I'm not the same Christmas tree I was 20 years ago. And I don't want to give anyone the idea that if my lights don't look as good or my hair clogs the vacuum, that I should be replaced.
So, okay, I really like this one because... I'm assuming your lights are referring to your boobs.
Yeah, and I did
not
also...
Not your bright, shining eyes.
I did pop the girls while I said that. So.
But I do think that it's funny saying, like, you're not going to get rid of this Christmas tree because it's not as perky as it used to be.
Right.
Because I'll be damned if someone's going to get rid of me either.
Yeah, I don't want a new perky Christmas tree coming in and taking my place.
That tree still has a lot of personality and things to offer this family. That tree knows us. It's been through everything. So I think that's really good. And then you hang the
I put on replacement lights, lots of garland and ornaments to hide the holes in my Charlie Brown tree. And I tied a sweet red ribbon on my new treasure and hung that gecko right by baby Jesus. I tend to value worthless things.
Bam.
And then I said, which I guess is why I'm here, which was probably a little hurtful. Like, open mics.
Yeah. I think that was great. And then, unfortunately, you recently experienced what I think most, if not all, women who do stand-up comedy experience. You got some kind of dirtbag comments from dudes thinking they wanted to hit on you in some shape or form.
So Saturday night I performed, and my entire set was, let me tell you about my family. I talked about both my kids and my husband. That was the entirety of my set. All I talked about was my family.
Right.
And then comics.
Well, a guy came up to you, and I'm not going to get into all the backstory. He asked you, so you identify as a thick woman. Or did he say thick girl?
He said thick girl.
Okay, so he said, you identify as, now.
Which was, it was highly confusing because thick sounded negative, but girl, that sounds positive.
So that's what I want to say real quick, is what I find amusing in this situation is that you were not offended at the fact that you were getting hit on. You were initially upset because you thought he was calling you fat.
Yeah, that's what thick means, right?
No, it's T-H-I-C-C.
You know I can't spell.
It means you're shapely with boobs and butt, you know. And, you know, today's society, we got Kim Kardashian and Nicki Minaj and all these. It's not like when we were growing up. With the Kate Moss?
Yeah, I felt like he said I wear husky jeans.
No, that wasn't it at all. Now, so, but as soon as I heard the story, I was like, man, why do dudes always got to do this trash behavior? So we were both upset, but just for the wrong reasons.
Totally for different reasons. And then following that, another comic walked up to me and he said, do you have any upside down pineapples in your house?
Which, okay, so real quick. For those who don't know, upside down pineapple is a sign that you're a swinger. It means you and your significant other have relations with other couples.
Which I learned that when I started hanging out with comics. I did not know that before August.
But just to be clear, the first time we came to your house, anytime Lee and I go anywhere, we always have a conversation to remind ourselves. And it basically goes, okay, when we get in there, if we see any upside down pineapples, we enjoy the evening, and then we politely leave and never go back again.
I have to ask you, is pineapple upside down cake okay, or is that a sign of swingers?
Now, what I think is that it's okay for anybody, but it's definitely the dessert served at a swinger party.
I only ask because my entire childhood, my mom served pineapple upside down cake. I'm just trying to wonder if I should have that conversation with her.
Well, there you go. There's another little tag for you. All right. So real quick. So which should your jokes got left? I'll be honest with you. I thought for writing a set the day of and performing it, I think they were all good bits. I think that performing them more, writing a few more tags for each joke will be beneficial. And then, of course, you know, there was the assignment of memorizing it.
I failed.
But, I think it's good. And we got a couple more weeks in the holiday season, another month. You know, I think you could run this set through New Year's, and I think it'd be good.
I think I can stretch this to a lot more minutes than it was.
As far as which jokes didn't, I mean, we talked about them all. I think just maybe the mayonnaise. Stuff about the mayonnaise.
The mayonnaise.
Why do you think?
It was a plop.
So here's an... here's Here's a good here's a, all right, you're cracking yourself up. That's great. That's the reaction you want to get from your audience, by the way.
Oh.
All right, so here's one. Why do you think the jokes that did work worked? What do you think was kind of the key to those getting laughs?
They were short and direct statements that didn't take any extra brain space to compute.
And what you were doing now is, your husband and I have both said, and I think Lee, my wife, has said it as well, your writing initially was what you would read in a humorous book, right? And there's a different structure to that, and I'm not really the smartest person in the world, so I can't really describe it. But I think it's like being succinct and to the point in stand-up, and you did a much better job of that this week.
I also agree with you that it did sound like a book before, but we've already established that I can't spell, so we really have to take that off the table. I think one of the other things that helped me this week was I edited myself prior.
Yeah.
Which is something I'm ashamed to say I hadn't done up until that point.
Well, I think it really added a lot, or I guess it took away a lot.
Less is more.
Now let me ask you specifically, I guess, the one about mayonnaise. So why don't you think that joke worked?
It wasn't funny or succinct. I think that the easy route would go to be to talk about how it's so close to splooge. I mean, it's creamy, it's white, it gets put in everything.
I don't know about that. Because I think it's almost...
It's out of character for me.
It's almost hacky. It's really what you do. Now, what I do think is funny is that your husband ate something that resulted in him having to jump out of the car and poop underneath a bridge.
On the main highway.
which, maybe there's something in there about the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But whatever, because that leads to him being appreciative of the fact that you hoard all these napkins in the car, which previously...
He hasn't complained in the last year.
Which I think what might be funny about that is when you get napkins at the fast food restaurant, he's wondering why you hold on to them, because you never even use them when you're eating the food that you order. So why would you ever need them in the future? And what he doesn't know is that...
Shit happens.
You've been pooping on the side of the road for years.
Oh, that's funny.
Right? Like, maybe that's what it was. And he's going, oh, now I get it.
Oh, that's...
Or maybe he thinks that's why you do it. He's like, babe, how often are you having to pull over and poop now? Maybe you've been married for 20 years. And he's like, you know, I thought it was weird that you've never pooped in the house while I was there. You've just been pulling over and doing it. So maybe that's where you can go with... Maybe it doesn't have to be because of the mayonnaise. Maybe it's just whatever you ate at Thanksgiving dinner made him have to pull over and poop, but there you go. And so one of the questions was, what could you change about the ones that didn't work to make them work? And I think we just really went over that.
Yeah, that's definitely a place to explore. The idea of everyone out in the audience looking at me and thinking that I regularly take dumps under bridges on the sides of highways.
Hey.
And then wipe with Taco Bell napkins.
Which they're probably made better than any two-ply toilet paper.
They are sturdy.
And then one of the final questions is, could changing the jokes that worked make them work even better?
Absolutely.
And I think that, yes, but not only just changing, but I think just adding to them, right? Like adding more tags, like going down.
Expanding like my Thanksgiving waist.
Everything is, what is funny about everything, just keep going as deep as you can. So that was it for the assignment on your comedy. But then there was the final assignment of watching a different special.
Yes.
Did you do that?
I got halfway through. It's just been a time thing since I got assigned.
And it was the one that he recommended was Greg Giraldo's Midlife Vices. Now, Greg Giraldo, you weren't really familiar with.
I had never seen him.
He, in my opinion, is one of the greatest comedians that there was.
He's amazing.
He was a lawyer. I think he graduated from Columbia.
Damn.
Or something like that. One of those big law schools. And he helped the Roastmaster General. He helped get Jeff Ross out of some kind of misdemeanor infraction. And he had started doing open mics. And when he helped him do that, he like took him under his wing and did some more comedy stuff with him. And Greg Giraldo honestly became just really great. So
he seems so at ease, and like it's, I don't know, you'll have to tell me. I see this with you on stage too. He's just so comfortable and flows so nicely and is still picking up on things that are going on out in the audience. And that's not me.
Well, so that will come with time, especially the being able to do your set that you've prepared while all the time looking out into the audience, into the showroom, and be thinking of things that are going on. So you would say that his personality there in his set was just calm, collected, and
he was easy. He was easy to watch. He was easy to laugh at. He seemed comfortable. It wasn't constant self-deprecating, but it also wasn't like a bravose sort of tone either.
So did his jokes appear to be like real?
Yes.
Or was it something clearly made up?
Like they had a realism to me.
Right. And I think that is what audiences really like. Like they want to feel connected to you. And if you're saying something that's silly and clearly made up, they're not going to get that feeling of attachment.
Right. And some want to be connected with you in an upside down pineapple kind of way.
You know, I think it's just good to watch different specials. The next one that I would say is watch Patrice O'Neill's Elephant in the Room.
Okay.
That's a really good one. And I think like just every week you should watch like one or two comedy specials.
I do a lot better listening. So for me, it takes me sitting down and to watch, because I also run a business where I don't have to think a whole lot. I use my hands.
Uh-huh.
So listening works well for me, but I'm seeing that there's a whole lot of value in being able to watch.
I mean, I think like if you watch Ralphie May,
yes,
you'll see he sits on the stool the whole time. If you watch Chris Rock has said that every movement he's making on stage is in sync to how he's talking, and it's providing emphasis on some of his words. And you'll notice some comedians will just stand behind a mic stand, and some comedians hold the mic. What you'll notice is, like, when you go and watch newer comedians, a lot of them fidget.
Mm.
Like, you'll notice, like, spinning the mic cord.
Okay.
And that is a clear sign to the audience that this person is uncomfortable and not used to doing what they're doing. And so I think it is important to actually watch them. I would watch Blue Collar Comedy Tour and look at the differences between, say, Bill Engvall, Larry the Cable Guy, and Ron White. And Jeff is really more of a classic, and Bill Engvall is as well, but I don't want you to judge Jeff Foxworthy. But look at those other three.
Can I just pick Ron White and I can sit on a bar stool with a glass of whiskey?
But Ron isn't sitting the whole time. But this is what I'm saying. So watch, but it's not about like watching one and being like, that's the way to do it. It's about watching the style of the three and seeing the difference in how that affects their performances.
All of the guys that you just mentioned all have huge personas. Like for our on-air personality part of being a DJ, we sit down and we list what characteristics that we are going to emphasize on air,
mm-hmm.
which makes us a little bit of a caricature, but it helps express us in few words, right? And I feel like those guys kind of have that they're in a lane, and that lane isn't as wide as a lot of guys' lanes.
Yeah, and you know what? I think if you'll see, like, the persona that a person puts on can really separate, even though all of those guys that I just mentioned were under the blue collar umbrella.
Right.
Larry was the silly one who went bigger than any of them. But Ron stood out the most to me and a lot of people because he was almost like a rock star. He had a suit on. He was drinking his scotch, had a cigar. Like, he was clearly different than Bill and Jeff. You know, and I mean, obviously Larry as well, but the two straight men, Bill and Jeff, and then Ron, they could have all been the same, but Ron really shined outside of them with his kind of drunk superstar. I don't really know how to describe it. Like, he was different, and it was great.
I think you said it right when you said rock star vibes.
Yeah.
Like, because he does have that air of I don't give an F.
I don't give an F. So, I think we kind of covered your portion of it this week.
Yeah, let's hear what's going on with Billy.
She's great. I guess my thing would be I want to get her potty trained. She's 19 months old, and when it comes time to poop, she usually goes and hides somewhere. So I know that she's aware of what she's doing. And I know that 19, they say usually around like 18 months some people can start, but it can go for, 2 to 3 years before they're fully potty trained. So I'm just curious.
We're still working on my husband.
Yeah, some people don't know that on the side of the road isn't the best place. So I just want to know, are there any tricks to doing it? Like, I'm trying, I mean, here's what we do. We just take her to the bathroom with us.
Right.
And we're like, hey, we're going to go poop now. And we torture her by making her be in the bathroom while we poop.
No wonder she's running and hiding. I don't think there's one correct answer for this. I think a lot of it has to do with the child. My dad said that his mom, who had like a litter of kids, that all her kids were potty trained by 12 months. And she would just let them run around naked and do their thing, and then they would be able to catch them in the moment like a dog.
So here's what I think about that. Honestly, I think that could probably be one of the best ways, because you grab them and you sit them on the toilet and they know.
Right.
I don't want to mess up my hardwood floors.
Yeah, I get that. I didn't do that method.
A little drip of water leaves a stain on it, which another podcast we could talk about that, because I definitely think there needs to be a protective sheen put on it. We haven't had them polished or whatever. I don't know what it is, but we haven't done it. But I think that would probably be, if it was possible, that would be the best, because that's what you do with puppies.
Right.
You see them do it, you grab them, and you take them outside.
Right.
You try to take them outside. I think one thing with puppies, you take them out over and over and over. And when they do it, you give them a treat.
That's the method that I went with, which was the reward method. So, like, for our daughter, we got a hand stamp, and we put it by the potty. And every time she went pee-pee on the potty, she got a stamp.
That's a great one.
And it doesn't cost anything. Other people have done it with, like, a special treat, like M&M's. Like, you get 3 M&M's if you go pee-pee on the potty, or you get whatever, gummy bears, or whatever it is that your kid likes. I didn't want to associate food with it, so the first time that I went to the store and bought, like for my boy, I bought him 4 Matchbox cars, and we set them up in the bathroom, and he wanted those Matchbox cars, but he had to go poo-poo on the potty to get one.
Ah.
And so he started associating it with it, and it was a goal that he could go for. And when after he did it the first time, the next 3 cars went in succession, and that was the end of pooping in diapers.
What age was this?
He was older than your daughter.
And what
I would say,
what about your daughter? With
she
the stamps?
Was. Let's see. We were in D.C., so. Probably between 18 and 2 years.
Okay, so
but
right
she was also verbal at that point. So I think once your kid gets verbal, which is not far away, she's talking. I just don't know what she's saying. I think once Billy gets verbal, it'll be easier. But she understands what you're saying.
Yes, she's very. Her vocabulary is good. She knows a lot of words, and she's even saying some as well.
She's amazing. Yeah, she's right about to pop off.
Okay.
You're really close to having to back fist that girl.
never. Never, ever, ever. I mean, she's already so sassy. Like, she's really easing us into it.
Dude, it was a joke.
Oh, Lee wanted me to ask about, did you wake your kids up from a nap?
No.
Because we find that sometimes if she sleeps too long, she's got a real attitude problem.
Oh, no. I never did, mostly because the happiest part of my day was when my kid was asleep.
Billy is such a good sleeper, and that is a great time for us as well. And I think it's important, sleep training.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy, like clockwork, goes down at noon for a nap with no fuss, and she goes to sleep at 7 o'clock. With no fuss.
She's amazing.
And she sleeps through the night 12 hours.
Clone that kid.
And so her nap is 2 hours long. But what we've found is that if she goes past the 2 hours...
Then wake her up.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think that's something that we had to do. I was wondering if you had any experience with that.
My kids, yeah, they would just sleep until they woke up. She's just taking the one nap.
That's it now.
And she does it every day.
Every day.
And it's still 2 hours?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
You don't need advice from me.
You're raising
the perfect child.
I know what I want to talk about next week.
Awesome.
So let's give the people a little preview.
Yes.
Tease
them.
So week two of John Roy's entirely free comedy class. You can find this on Tumblr, by the way. Just Google John Roy entirely free comedy class and it'll come up.
What's Tumblr?
It was an old social media site.
Did it fall over?
It's still up. So a lot of people used to post pornographic stuff on there.
Oh.
And they took all that off and then everyone quit using it.
Okay.
So the first assignment in week two is going to be think about everybody that you saw go up at the different open mics. Which one did you enjoy the most? And then ask some of these questions like, what did you enjoy about it? What did you not enjoy about it? And why? So on those different comedians that you saw, who was your favorite and, you know, what stood out about their set and what didn't?
Okay.
And then the next assignment would be, who was your least favorite? Why didn't you like that? What did you think was unsuccessful about it?
Are you just trying to put a target on my back in the local community?
No, we don't have to, like, out anybody. We'll just be kind of vague about who it is and what their set was about. You know what I'm saying? I just
Fair.
Want you to take these things and, you know, answer some of these questions. Do you think that the ones you liked or didn't like were telling mostly true stories, or were they kind of jokey? Were they standing there? Were they moving? Were they kind of expressive with their body gestures? Was there something in their tone of voice that might have been different? And then the way they structured their jokes, whether or not they talked a lot or were more succinct and things like that. Okay?
Okay.
The next thing I want you to do is just keep a small notebook with you at all times.
I have that on my phone.
Okay. I guess this is a different time than when John Roy initially wrote this.
Yeah, John Roy's a dinosaur.
So just keep something on you so you can always do stuff. Record anything that you think or see that makes you laugh. And then just write down maybe a bit about some things that like popped into your head, or maybe something that you saw that was funny. And then like let me know which joke is based off of that.
Okay.
I asked you to do the 3 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been doing that?
Yes.
Okay, so I want you to go through those now and see if any of those things that you write in the morning, if anything from that would be useful. If you can turn any of that into a joke. And I don't want you to ever stop doing those 3 pages, but just go back and read it and see if anything stands out to you.
I think from looking back through them, I haven't seen anything really that I think is astounding. But what they are doing is help me understand myself better.
Yeah.
I'm growing as a person.
So it's you're
I'm journey. Getting super thick.
She's super thick, super thick. She's super thickin'. Okay. So the next thing I want you to do is to put a title to each one of your jokes that you did last week.
Okay.
And then write them down in the order that you performed them. And then, you know, go over, like, which ones worked and which ones didn't. And then if a joke failed, like the one that we talked about with the mayonnaise, think about how you performed it and what you could do to make it different. Make sure you get a recording of all your sets. And that's pretty much it. I think that'll cover what we're going to do next week for you. And then for me, I'm going to want to talk about how to decorate a Christmas tree in a child-safe manner. So keep that in mind.
Well, you already have cats, so you've been working on that for years.
And that, everybody, is what we'll be talking about next week. We have plenty of time to work on it and get prepared because we are
Mitch and Kelly.
Oh, dang. Not in sync with each other.
Mitch.
And Kelly.
Stuck in Texas.
Stuck in Texas. All right.
Yeehaw. Chat a second and see what... our little levels look like.
Well, here's my levels. This is how I talk.
So I'll talk about a little bit closer right here and we'll match.
Okay, sounds good.
How do we sound?
Beautiful.
It's just gorgeous. So pretty.